Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
and GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Every week on Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology. And today, we're going to talk about the universe, this great universe of ours. With us today, once again, is Professor Chris Empey. He's Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and one of my favorites is Beyond, Our Future in Space. And if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We now have over 5 million fans on Facebook. And I've written 5 New York Times bestsellers. The latest New York Times bestseller is called The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. And it's about what I do for a living. I work in something called string theory, which we're not going to talk about today. But string theory is a candidate, a rather controversial candidate, for a theory of everything. But again, with us today is Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona. And today we're going to talk about the universe. But before we begin, Chris, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, when you were a kid, what steered you in the direction of becoming an astronomer?
Well, I think for a lot of astronomers, physics was sort of my gateway drug. I grew up in Britain, which doesn't have a lot of starry skies, so I didn't really have the pleasure of astronomy growing up. But I'd studied physics, and sometimes astronomy is just the application of physics outward to the universe to try and figure out how things work. So that's how I get into it.
Okay. Well, let's just jump right into some of the big stories. The big story, of course, is the Webb Space Telescope. It's in position. It's a million miles from the planet Earth in what is called the Lagrange point. And what do we expect to find? The pictures are just beginning to come in now, slowly. What do we expect to find with the Webb Space Telescope?
Well, for people who like the news cycle, the next few months are going to be like watching paint dry, because it's basically slowly focusing and calibrating all its instruments and running all the checks it needs to do. So we're not going to see real science images until probably the end of May or the beginning of June. It's taken a selfie, which we saw a few weeks ago, but the real data isn't going to start flowing for a couple of months. But it's already done this incredible thing of deploying itself, and many of the failure modes that it had didn't happen, so everyone's breathing a sigh of relief.
And I understand that if you compare the Hubble to the Webb, that the Webb Space Telescope is 7 times bigger. So explain to us a little bit about the difference between the Webb and the Hubble Space Telescope.
Sure. Well, the Hubble Space Telescope was constrained to be the largest mirror and telescope you could fit in the shuttle, because it was going to be launched and then serviced by the shuttle. And that really is 2.4 meters. That's not that big a mirror. It's not even in the top 70 or 80 if you put it in a list of telescopes, the Hubble. So to get a bigger telescope, it had to be launched by a big rocket and be this ambitious technology that unfolded in space, and that's what made it both difficult and risky.
And as I recall, when the Hubble Space Telescope first went into orbit, it was, I think, nearsighted, right? The mirrors were not exactly polished correctly. That was rather an embarrassment. So there had to be another space mission just to fix the optics of the Hubble Space Telescope, right?
That's right. And a few years later, it was built perfectly wrong. It was a misplaced calibration element, so they were able to correct it back to its original specification. And then 4 more times, the shuttle serviced it and replaced solar panels and instruments, and that's why even in its fourth decade, the Hubble is still doing pretty good work. But the new kid on the block is James Webb, and it's bigger, and it's infrared, and it's going to look for first light in the universe, so everyone's excited about that.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. The Hubble was good for the ultraviolet and optical frequencies. The Webb, as you said, is good for the infrared frequencies. But what can you get with infrared that you couldn't get so much with the Hubble?
Well, for looking at the most distant galaxies and sort of first light in the universe, first stars and galaxies, the Hubble is running out of steam, both because of its smaller size and because it works with visible light. So the most distant light in the universe is redshifted or shifted to longer wavelengths by the expansion of the universe. And for those very early galaxies, as by the time that light reaches us, it's been redshifted to a wavelength that Hubble really can't detect. But James Webb was built to detect, so that's why it can do that project. And also for some of the exoplanet work, where James Webb is going to be sort of snipping the atmospheres of exoplanets, many of the spectral transitions that it's looking for are in the infrared region of the spectrum.
And I understand there's something called the Dark Ages, that when the universe was born, things were not that luminous after the instant of creation. It took time. It took another billion years or so before the first stars began to light up. So can't the Webb penetrate into this so-called Dark Age?
That's really what it was designed to do. Not the only thing, but certainly one of its main goals. Yes, it should be able to get all the way back to that period of time. So the universe was, of course, was a hot fireball in the Big Bang and was glowing brightly, but then that faded and the universe became dark, and then it took a while for gravity to form the first structures. And James Webb is also going to try and tell us whether stars form before galaxies and where black holes fit in that picture. Did they form first? Because we know every galaxy has a black hole in it, so we want to know which came first.
And as you mentioned, the Webb Space Telescope has the ability to pick up exoplanets orbiting other stars in the universe. Does that mean, therefore, that we might be able to get photographs, actual photographs of planets orbiting other stars in the galaxy?
And not with James Webb. It's not going to do that experiment. There's some big ground-based telescopes coming online that will try and do that. James Webb's skill is going to be taking spectra of the atmospheres of Earth-like exoplanets and essentially looking for absorption from items of gas in the atmosphere that indicate biology. If you were looking at the Earth from afar off, you'd see oxygen and ozone, which were created by microbes a long time ago. So it's going to do that kind of experiment for sort of Earth and super Earth out there. It's painful work, though. It's going to take hundreds and hundreds of hours just to do 6 or 8 targets.
Okay, and speaking about exoplanets out there, there's been some recent activity in the Alpha Centauri sector. Proxima Centauri, one of the stars in the triple star system, apparently has a solar system with planets, some of them very Earth-like. So what is the latest concerning what we know about exoplanets? Have we found any that look just like the Earth?
Yes. I mean, they're not exactly Earth clones, but there are probably a couple of hundred that are within 30% of the Earth in size or in mass. Now, we don't know if they have water on them. We don't know if they have life on them, but they're probably the best candidates for being habitable because they're at the right distances from their stars that they could have liquid water. So, yeah, we've got a couple hundred, and the Proxima Centauri system is exciting because, of course, it's the closest system. Breakthrough Starshot are going to try and send little tiny robotic probes to that system in a generation or so. So it's very exciting to have a possibly habitable planet so nearby, 4 light years.
And speaking about that, even though it's the closest star system to the planet Earth, therefore the first target for some of our probes, isn't it also true that it's a red dwarf? And red dwarfs tend to be unstable with solar flares. Well, let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of the universe with Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona. And if you want to get on Science Fantastic, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letter to the radio station or the website you're listening to, and bingo, maybe you can get on Science Fantastic and 100 radio stations that carry the show. Stay tuned.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go, and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire fireplace grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, with us online is Professor Chris Empey. He's a distinguished professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and one of my favorites is Beyond Our Future in Space. So we're talking about this great universe of ours. But we last left off, we were talking about the fact that the nearest star to the Earth, the target for some of our probes that may one day reach the nearest stars, is Proxima Centauri of the Alpha Centauri system. But the star itself is a red dwarf. And some people think that red dwarfs are rather unstable, with solar flares ripping into outer space, and they may perhaps make life uninhabitable on some of these planets. But red dwarfs are very common throughout the galaxy. So what are your thoughts about whether or not red dwarf stars could be targets for our exploration for life in the universe?
Yes, I think they should be targets. You're right. They do have a lot of activity, and that can be a problem for a planet. They also, the planets tend to be very close because the habitable zone is shrunk close to the star with its weaker radiation. And that means they're tidally locked. So an Earth-like exoplanet will have one the same face facing that red dwarf with its flares. That all sounds bad for life, but if you're talking about a super Earth or slightly larger than Earth-sized planet with a big shrouding atmosphere that could possibly protect life, then I think you could still have biology. And then the numbers game is really in red dwarfs' favors, because there's 100 red dwarfs for every sun-like star, so the habitable real estate overall is really sitting with red dwarfs.
Okay, and so if you were to look at this encyclopedia of 4,000 planets that we've observed going around other stars, is there any one or two or a handful of them that really look promising that might have, for example, oxygen atmospheres or water vapor in the atmosphere? Any planets pique your curiosity and you think to yourself, this could be it?
Well, just as with Proxima Centauri, we get two shots in a binary system. We get two shots at an Earth-like planet. The TRAPPIST-1 system, which was published with great fanfare a few years ago, it's very exciting because it's a full planetary system. There are 7 planets, and 3 are in the habitable zone, and they're all Earth-like. They're all within 30 or 40% of the Earth. So there's one system with 3 shots at finding life. So that's definitely worth concentrating on.
And any planets, exoplanets with atmospheres that resemble in the slightest way our atmosphere?
See, that's a great experiment that we need to be doing. And that, it's very challenging because you have to isolate the light from an exoplanet. And Earth will only reflect a billionth of the sun's light. So it's a billion times fainter than the sun, and it's very close to it in the sky. And we're going to use ground-based telescopes, the next generation of 20 and 30-meter telescopes, to suppress the starlight and be able to smear that evil reflected planet light into a spectrum and look for life-bearing gases like oxygen and ozone. And that's about a few years away, probably 4 or 5 years away, that experiment.
Okay. Now, we talked about the problems of solar flares that red dwarf stars may emit. However, our sun also has solar flares, and one of them recently wiped out 40, count them, 40 out of 49 mini-satellites that were launched by Elon Musk's SpaceX. So isn't this a warning that we have to think seriously about space weather, something that we don't think about? But solar flares can be quite dangerous, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this was a pretty minor storm. There's a scale of 1 to 5 that they have for solar storms, and this was just a 1. And it took out these 40 satellites. And it was a bit of a self-inflicted error. I mean, this is $80 million cost to SpaceX. And they could have possibly boosted them to a higher orbit, but they didn't. So, yes, it's a warning that these ambitious plans for tens of thousands of satellites in these constellations that are being launched, not just by SpaceX, but other companies, they're going to be vulnerable when there's a really big solar storm.
And speaking about a really big solar storm, what do we know about the so-called Carrington event that happened way back in 1859? It was so powerful that it wiped out telegraph wires back then. If something like that were to happen again, it would really disturb communications, power, refrigeration, banking, everything on the planet Earth, right?
That's right. The Carrington event happened, you know, on the cusp of our modern technology, so we didn't really get to see the damage. There was a lesser event in 1965 that took out a lot of the electrical grid of the North America, basically, in the Northeast. But it was much weaker than the Carrington event. So we haven't had a modern-day Carrington event. And they happen every few hundred years, so you could say we're due. And I don't really know what the consequence would be. Our resilience of our electrical grid is not as good as we'd like, as we often read.
And I was going through the Internet about the Carrington event, and if you take a look at ice cores that trapped the atmosphere hundreds, centuries, thousands of years ago in ice, you realize that around 700 AD, there was another solar flare 10 times more ferocious than the Carrington event. So in other words, sometimes the sun can really have a temper tantrum, right? But of course, way back then, there was no space program, no electronics, no telecommunications. People weren't even aware of the fact that the sun was having a temper tantrum. But it's something to think about, right, as we explore outer space and enter the age of electricity?
Especially because we don't really get a big lead time warning on these kind of events. There is a little warning, and you probably have a good fraction of a day, some hours of warning, but that's not enough to secure all our electrical systems if they're not resilient anyway. So, yeah, this is a concern. It's hard to anticipate or plan for an event that might only happen every century or so, but we sort of need to.
Yes, and there were some physicists who actually went to Congress saying that with just millions of dollars in funding, they could put shielding, redundancies, all sorts of things that would lessen the impact of a gigantic solar flare. But the reaction from Congress was, well, the giggle factor. What? The sun erupting? Give me a break. So at the present time, we are basically sitting ducks in case the sun decides to have another Carrington event.
I know.
And then
there's cybersecurity as well. I mean, we have bad actors who are also trying to take out our electrical grid, so we have to be paying attention in general to this.
Right. And also, let's say a few things about the planet Mars. Several months ago, we had not one, not two, but three probes that reached the red planet because there's a window of opportunity. One probe from the United Arab Emirates, one probe from China, and one probe from the U.S. of A. So there's a lot of hardware now on the Mars or orbiting Mars. And have we learned anything? Have we gotten any new information, given the fact that several nations are now putting Mars in its crosshairs?
Well, I think the rovers that we've had going pretty much continuously for two decades have sealed and tied with a bow the story that Mars was warmer and wetter in the past and had standing bodies of water, shallow seas, and therefore certainly could have been habitable and had microbes. I mean, the other thing that's happened that's good is that we're finally stashing samples for eventual return in probably 7 or 8 years. And when getting Mars rocks back in the lab is so much better than using these remote rovers to do the experiments. They're just much more limited than what you can do in the lab on Earth.
And isn't it true that we actually have Mars rocks on the Earth already in the form of meteorites that may have been blasted out of the Martian surface millions of years ago, drifted in space, and then landed on the South Pole? So isn't it true that in some sense we already have fragments of Mars on the Earth?
Yeah, absolutely. NASA keeps a website, and I think there's well over 100, about 130 Martian meteorites cataloged. Most of them are found on the Antarctic, where they kind of stand out on the pristine ice. They have a huge disadvantage, though, which is we don't know their provenance. We don't know where on Mars they came from. And it just turns out most of them happen to be igneous rock that's been through heavy altering by volcanism. What we really want are sedimentary rocks where there might be traces of life. So the Mars rocks we bring back will be much better for looking for traces of life than the Martian meteorites that we get for free.
Okay. Also, there was an announcement a few years ago that under the ice caps of Mars, there could be a lake of liquid water. Well, we'll talk about that after the break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135, and maybe your thoughts will be heard on national radio and the Internet. Give us a call. Our special guest today is Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, and the author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes. So stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Russian President Vladimir Putin will be sanctioned by the Biden administration. The White House saying the move against Putin is being done in partnership with allies in Europe. This as New York is preparing to welcome thousands of refugees from Ukraine. Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine saying New York City needs to start preparing for the arrival of refugees.
The city does need to start investing now in the nonprofits that have the expertise but are already overstretched and need to start preparing now for what could be the arrival of thousands just in New York City alone.
Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson says she's truly humbled to be President Biden's nominee for the Supreme Court. The president keeping his promise to use skin color as a main prerequisite for his Supreme Court nominee. USA Radio News. The CDC is updating the metrics it uses for recommending masks. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky was among those to unveil a new community-level metric system that labels an area's COVID level as low, medium, and high.
As the virus continues to circulate in our communities, we must focus our metrics beyond just cases in the community and direct our efforts toward protecting people at high risk for severe illness.
The CDC saying masks only need to be worn when a community is in the high level. Immunocompromised are recommended to wear masks in a location where it is in the medium tier. Pope Francis is weighing in on Russia invading Ukraine.
AFP, the French private international news agency headquartered in Paris, is reporting Pope Francis made a visit Friday to the Russian embassy in the Holy See, also called the See of Rome, to express his concern for the war. The meeting lasted less than an hour. From the West Coast, USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
USA Radio News.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Go to GCNteam.com or call 855-GCN-MALL. That's 855-426-6255. GCNteam.com or 855-426-6255. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
The first 10 amendments to our country's Constitution were adopted in 1791. The first of these broadly protects the rights of free speech and free press. Free speech means the free and public expression of opinions without censorship, interference, and restraint by the government. 231 years later, free speech across America is under chronic and insidious attack. GCN is under attack. Your freedom is currently under siege from those who do not want you to know the truth. I'm asking our fellow broadcasters and you to rise up and help us defend our right to continue telling you the truth. Would you like to join us? If so, please consider visiting SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com. From there, you can learn more about what's happening. You may click follow, share, give, and pray. I'm Vincent Finelli.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us on the line is Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, Professor Chris Empey, author of Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and Beyond Our Future in Space. Well, a few years ago, there was an announcement that under the ice caps of Mars, there could be a lake of liquid water, which we once thought couldn't be on the Martian surface, but there was underneath the surface, a lake. So what are your thoughts about whether or not we have found any indication at all that life may still exist on the planet Mars? Is it just an illusion? After all we've done, have we found any evidence that life maybe once existed on Mars or could exist on the red planet even today?
So the subsurface lake evidence is a little controversial because another subsequent group has questioned whether it is a lake. They're using radar in ways that actually make it a little tricky to distinguish between liquid water and ice or even the amount of it. So that work is sort of a little disputed, but the general idea that there could be liquid water somewhere under the surface of Mars is pretty strong because there are other pieces of evidence that we have subsurface aquifers that occasionally erupt through to the surface and send material down a slope. There were famous images from back in the day from orbiters. So it's very likely that there's water kept liquid by pressure on top or by mild radioactive heating from below. So that's a good bet that there is water under the surface in various locations on Mars, localized water. And if there's that and there's a liquid water energy source and carbon-rich material, you have all the ingredients for life. So it's a fair guess that there is there.
Okay, but in terms of if you're a betting man and take bets about whether there's life on Mars, I guess you could safely say that so far there is no conclusive evidence for life on Mars. Is that right?
That's right. And the slightly frustrating thing is that all these clever rovers that we were sent or are we planning to send, they can't dig or drill far enough down below to reach where the liquid water is likely to be. It's going to be tens or hundreds of meters down minimum. So we're scratching the surface with our rovers, and that's not going to resolve this issue right away.
And also, the rovers cannot go to the ice caps, right? It's probably pretty dangerous for a rover to go that far. And so who knows? Who knows what's under the ice? Because we've never really been there, right?
That's right. There was a Phoenix lander about 15 years ago, sent from my university, actually, University of Arizona. And it was a stationary lander, but it had liquid brine. It detected liquid on the surface. It was so salted that it could be liquid even at Mars cold temperatures. But that, again, it didn't prove that there was life, and there was no life detection experiment on that lander.
Okay, and some people think that maybe the problem is that our rovers are too slow and clumsy. They cannot go to areas that are volcanic or have lots of rocks or valleys or ice. But some people think that the next generation of rovers could be more like dogs. There's a group in Boston that actually makes robots that look like a dog, can hunt like a dog, move like a dog. Would that be a game changer in the sense that we no longer have clumsy, slow rovers that can only move on a flat surface if we have replacement rovers which can run like a dog? Any thoughts?
Sure, those kind of rovers would be great. But also we got a proof of concept this past year with the helicopter we flew on Mars. That was very challenging given the thin atmosphere. So if you have gyrocopters or drones.
Okay, well, let's take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue the discussion with Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona. Today we're talking about the universe on Science Fantastic. Stay tuned.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
92
$1,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you ready to retire? Inflation is picking up, the markets are volatile, and the dream of a comfortable retirement is harder to attain than ever before. The stock market goes up and down is beyond your control. But you're at a point in your life where you can't afford to make big financial mistakes. I'm Al Abaroa, founder of Knight Strategic Wealth. Our investment strategy allows you to go up with the stock market, lock in your gains, and when the stock market goes down, your investment won't lose a dime. This works for your investments, savings at a brokerage firm, or even money at a bank. It's simple, it's safe, and that's why savvy investors work with us. Want to learn more? Text FREE to 833-898-0500, and we'll send our retirement readiness kit directly to your phone right now. If you want to help build a retirement portfolio that will go up with the market and literally never lose money, get our retirement readiness kit today and see how this strategy can help secure your future. Text FREE to 833-898-0500. Text FREE to 833-898-0500.
To you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us on the line is Distinguished Professor of Astronomy, Professor Chris Empey of the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, Beyond Our Future in Space. And when we last left off, we were talking about helicopters. Helicopters on Mars. Is this a game changer? I mean, we have rovers on the ground. We have orbiters in space going around Mars, but nothing in between. So is this a game changer if one day we can have fleets of drones on Mars? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And that would just be a precursor to doing it in other interesting places, too. And I think the most interesting would be Titan, that large moon of Saturn, which also is intriguing for possibility of life. And it has an atmosphere as thick as the Earth, so it's actually much easier to fly drones there than on Mars.
And on some of these satellites going around Jupiter and Saturn, they have methane on them. Methane is combustible if you can find some oxygen. And some people think that a moon like Titan could be a gas station for astronauts as they refuel on interplanetary missions. What are your thoughts? Is that just science fiction?
No, that's a good point, because carrying the fuel with us or lifting it out of Earth's gravity is ruinously expensive. So really, when we start to roam around the solar system, we need to find fuel as we go. We also know how to take rocks, normal rocks, say, on the moon, and break them down and get the hydrogen and the oxygen out of them, and we can make rocket fuel out of that. So, but having a place to fuel up on the way is going to make solar system exploration that much cheaper.
And, of course, there's no oxygen on Titan, so it's not going to explode, it's not going to blow up. But still, if we bring our oxygen, then, of course, that can be used for combustion for rocket fuel. Well, let me ask you another question about the moons of the Jupiter and Saturn, Europa is interesting because it has an ocean whose volume is larger than the volume of the water and the oceans on the planet Earth. What's the status of a probe to go to Europa? There were plans for it, but it was canceled. But are we serious about one day exploring the possibility of life on a moon of Jupiter?
Yes, I mean, it's had a checkered history, the idea of going back to Europa, because really we went first in the 1970s. But the Europa Clipper mission is on. I mean, it's a primarily European mission. There's some U.S. involvement. And it's going to go, I think, in about 3 years, and it will get there in the early 2030s. Now, it's not going to land on Europa. It's going to do very close orbiting, and it's possibly going to drop a heavy object and splash off some of the ice and then sniff it to see what's in that icy material. It would take a subsequent mission to do the ambitious thing of landing on the surface, melting through the ice, and releasing a hydrobot or something to look for life in the Europan Ocean. But just to go back with superior technology from 40 or 50 years ago would tell us a lot about Europa.
Now, some people believe that looking for life in the solar system, that Mars is not the way to go. That if you want to look for liquid water, and that's what, of course, journalists always say, follow the money, follow the money. Astronomers say, follow the water. The water is on Europa and Enceladus, a moon of Saturn. So you think, therefore, that throughout the galaxy, perhaps the most plentiful source of liquid water could be the moons of gas giants. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are some planetary scientists who think Mars gets a little too much of the attention and the money, but it is a lot harder to send missions to the outer solar system. But I think the best guess is that there are roughly a dozen moons of giant planets in the outer solar system, including Uranus and Neptune moons, that have liquid water under their surfaces. And, of course, Pluto is now included in that, a dwarf planet. So you've got a dozen places with liquid water in the outer solar system and one in the inner solar system, the Earth. And if that plays out in other locations, then that's the place you should be looking for life. It's called the cryogenic biosphere. It's the biosphere that's ostensibly in a place that's pretty cold, but there's local sources of heat to keep the water liquid and possibly to fuel the life.
Now, if throughout the galaxy, let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of our universe with Professor Chris Empey of the University of Arizona. Give us a call if you want to get on Science Fantastic. The number is 612-564-8135, and maybe you can get on national radio. Give us a call.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Distinguished Professor of Astronomy, Chris Empey, professor at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and Beyond Our Future in Space. Well, let's now talk about the possibility of life in our solar system. We talked about the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, which have liquid oceans underneath the ice cover. But some people think that if intelligent life gets off the ground in the ocean, that an aquatic species will only get so far because they'll never enter the electric age, because water will short-circuit electricity. Therefore, even if intelligent creatures evolve on these moons underneath the ice cover, that's about it. They won't be able to develop electronics. They won't be able to develop computers. The electric age will be short-circuited by water. But, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about life in the solar system and perhaps life in the galaxy?
I mean, that's a good point. We, of course, on Earth share the planet with species such as orcas and dolphins that most people think are quite intelligent, but they don't have an opposable thumb, so they're not going to develop technology really of other than a rudimentary kind. So as far as the existential question goes, yes, I'm quite confident there's intelligent life out there that just does not happen to have technology or does not happen to have the capabilities we do. So we're only ever going to be able to find subsets of intelligent life that have evolved in a certain way to have the tools that we have, traveling space, radio, optical technology, and so on. So it's much harder to find life in the general case than to find specific instances of life that have capabilities that you know how to look for. And some people worry about that because it means our experiments are sort of incomplete.
Well, there is something called Drake's Equation, which try to give an eyeball or rough estimate of how many intelligent civilizations there could be in the galaxy. And the numbers usually come out in the thousands. Of course, it depends on your assumptions. But if that's true, that the probability of intelligent life in the galaxy is rather high, then we have the Fermi paradox. Where are they? So what are your private thoughts? Of course, there's no way to prove it one way or the other. But what are your thoughts about, well, how come they don't land on the White House lawn and announce their existence? What are your thoughts?
All right. Well, you mentioned the short-circuiting of technology. Another sort of ominous factor in the Drake equation is L, the lifetime of the civilization within the technological communicative state. And the possibility is that civilizations are unstable and they self-destruct. And, you know, humans have had computers and technology for about a century, but we also had nuclear weapons and we've had the ability to destroy ourselves. And so if the lifetime on average of a civilization is low, then the number of them through the galaxy is low that we can communicate with. And that means we're pretty lonely out there. And so that's an ominous take on our own predicament, how it plays out in terms of other civilizations.
Well, let me ask you a question that you may not want to answer, but of course you probably get asked this question all the time. The United States Navy has released hours of videotapes taken by pilots, seasoned pilots, of things that fly up to Mach 20 in terms of velocity, things that gyrate with G-forces over 100. And if you analyze these videotapes frame by frame, you realize that these objects have gyrations that exceed the capabilities of our military. And our military has now admitted that, quote, they are not ours, unquote. But what are your thoughts? Of course, no one knows for sure. But what are your thoughts about all these sightings now from the military, where we have videotapes of objects flying up to 20 times the speed of sound and doing things that we think are basically not possible with present-day technology? But what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm a skeptic generally that we've been visited by extraterrestrial intelligence and alien technology. With a lot of these Navy videos, and even the military are circumspect in the way they describe them, that sometimes you have to be careful about connecting the dots. Often with just video or radar or only one mode of detection, you just don't have enough information. You don't know how far away the object is. You don't know its size, and therefore you don't really know how fast it's moving. And so some of the inferences that these are technologies that we couldn't have produced are based on information we really don't have in these sightings. So the Navy has, of course, told the intelligence agency, the National Intelligence Agency, has said, go back and get more data, and then we'll decide whether these things are a threat to national security.
So in other words, in your opinion, the jury is out. We simply don't have enough information.
Right. It's like the Scottish verdict, not proven. They have guilty, not guilty, and not proven.
Okay. Well, but what are your thoughts about the galaxy in general? There are, you know, according to Drake's equation, you start with 100 billion stars in the galaxy, of which we now know that all of them have planets on average. Every single star on average has a planet going around it. Maybe 20% of them, who knows for sure, are Earth-like or super-Earth-like. And you just do the mathematics and you come out with thousands of planets that could have intelligent life on them. Do you think that they all destroyed themselves? Or do you think that maybe some of them just don't bother with us and we're not important enough to make contact with? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a good interpretation. I mean, I do believe they exist, and they might not be nearby. There's a lot of anthropocentric thinking that we have to get beyond when we think of intelligent life, and especially technology, because they just may not be using the same modes of technology that we use. They may be communicating with gravity waves, say, something that we barely learned how to detect and we don't know how to produce at will. So it's just a matter of matching the technology to the ability to detect the civilization. And we're in our infancy with technology.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. So, Chris, thank you once again for being on Science Fantastic.
That was a pleasure.
Okay, once again, our special guest today has been Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books. Go to his website. Among them, Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and Beyond Our Future in Space. And you've been listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135 if you want to share your thoughts on the internet and also on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com.
Vietnam immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.